Chapter 2. Writing, in which he daily spent 6 hours at least, he would certainly find something either within doors or without, to employ himself. Much might be said both with regard to the wise and regular management, and the prudent methods he took to spend his time well towards the declension of his life. But, as his history may perhaps be shortly published at large by a better hand, I shall only observe in the general, that he was a person of great wisdom and sagacity. He understood nature beyond the ordinary capacity, and, if he had had a competency of learning suitable to his genius, neither this nor the former ages would have produced a better philosopher or a greater man. I come next to speak of the manner of his death and the consequences thereof, which are, indeed, very surprising, and, perhaps, not altogether unworthy a general observation. I shall relate them as briefly as I can, and leave everyone to believe or disbelieve as he thinks proper. Upon the 26th of May, 1718, according to his usual method, about 4 p.m, he went out to take his evening walk, but before he could reach the place he intended, he was seized with an apoplectic fit, which only gave him liberty to sit down under a tree, where, in an instant, he was deprived of all manner of sense and motion, and so he continued, as appears by his own confession afterwards, for more than 14 hours. His sister, who knew how exact he was in all his methods, finding him stay a considerable time beyond the usual hour, concludes that some misfortune must needs have happened to him, or he would certainly have been at home before. In short, she went immediately to all the places he was wont to frequent, but nothing could be heard or seen of him till the next morning, when a young man, as he was going to work, discovered him, and went home, and told his sister that her brother lay in such a place, under a tree, and, as he believed, had been robbed and murdered. The poor woman, who had all night been under the most dreadful apprehensions, was now frightened and confounded to the last degree. However, recollecting herself, and finding there was no remedy, she got 2 or 3 of her neighbors to bear her company, and so hastened with the young man to the tree, where she found her brother lying in the same posture that he had described. The dismal object at first view startled and surprised everybody present, and filled them full of different notions and conjectures. But some of the company going nearer to him, and finding that he had lost nothing, and that there were no marks of any violence to be discovered about him, they conclude that it must be an apoplectic, or some other sudden fit that had surprised him in his walk, upon which his sister and the rest began to feel his hands and face, and observing that he was still warm, and that there were some symptoms of life yet remaining, they conclude that the best way was to carry him home to bed, which was accordingly done with the utmost expedition. When they had got him into the bed, nothing was omitted that they could think of to bring him to himself, but still he continued utterly insensible for about 6 hours. At the 6th hour's end he began to move a little, and in a very short time was so far recovered, to the great astonishment of everybody about him, that he was able to look up, and to make a sign to his sister, to bring him a cup of water. After he had drunk the water he soon perceived that all his faculties were returned to their former stations, and though his strength was very much abated by the length and rigor of the fit, yet his intellects were as strong and vigorous as ever. His sister, observing him to look earnestly upon the company, as if he had something extraordinary to communicate to them, fetched him a pen and ink and a sheet of paper, which, after a short pause, he took, and wrote as follows. Dear sister, I have now no need of pen, ink, and paper, to tell you my meaning. I find the strings that bound up my tongue, and hindered me from speaking, are unloosed, and I have words to express myself as freely and distinctly as any other person. From whence this strange and unexpected event should proceed, I must not pretend to say any farther than this, that it is doubtless the hand of Providence that has done it, and in that I ought to acquiesce. Pray let me be alone for 2 or 3 hours, that I may be at liberty to compose myself, and put my thoughts in the best order I can, before I leave them behind me. The poor woman, though extremely startled at what her brother had written, yet took care to conceal it from the neighbors, who, she knew, as well as she, must be mightily surprised at a thing so utterly unexpected. Says she, "My brother desires to be alone. I believe he may have something in his mind that disturbs him." Upon which the neighbors took their leave and returned home, and his sister shut the door, and left him alone to his private contemplations. After the company were withdrawn, he fell into a sound sleep, which lasted from 2 till 6, and his sister, being apprehensive of the return of his fit, came to the bedside, and, asking softly if he wanted anything, he turned about to her, and spoke to this effect: "Dear sister, you see me, not only recovered out of a terrible fit, but likewise that I have the liberty of speech, a blessing that I have been deprived of almost 60 years, and I am satisfied you are sincerely joyful to find me in the state I now am in. But, alas, it is but a mistaken kindness. These are things, but of short duration, and if they were to continue for 100 years longer, I can't see how I should be anyways the better. I know the world too well to be fond of it, and am fully satisfied that the difference between a long and a short life is insignificant, especially when I consider the accidents and company I am to encounter. Do but look seriously and impartially upon the astonishing notion of time and eternity, what an immense deal has run out already, and how infinite it is still in the future. Do but seriously and deliberately consider this, and you will find, upon the whole, that 3 days and 3 ages of life come much to the same measure and reckoning." As soon as he had ended his discourse upon the vanity and uncertainty of human life, he looked steadfastly upon her. "Sister," says he, "I conjure you not to be disturbed at what I am going to tell you, which you will undoubtedly find to be true in every particular. I perceive my glasses run, and I have now no more to do in this world, but to take my leave of it. For tomorrow about this time my speech will be again taken from me, and, in a short time, my fit will return. And the next day, which I understand, is the day on which I came into this troublesome world, I shall exchange it for another, where, for the future, I shall forever be free from all manner of sin and sufferings." The good woman would have made him a reply, but he prevented her by telling her he had no time to hearken to unnecessary complaints or animadversions. "I have a great many things in my mind," says he, "that require a speedy and serious consideration. The time I have to stay is but short, and I have a great deal of important business to do in it. Time and death are both in my view, and seem both to call aloud to me to make no delay. I beg of you, therefore, not to disquiet yourself for me. What must be, must be. The decrees of Providence are eternal and unalterable. Why, then, should we torment ourselves about that which we cannot remedy? I must confess, my dear sister, I owe you many obligations for your exemplary fondness to me, and do solemnly assure you I shall retain the sense of them to the last moment. All that I have to request of you is, that I may be alone for this night. I have it in my thoughts to leave some short observations behind me, and likewise to discover some things of great weight which have been revealed to me, which may perhaps be of some use hereafter to you and your friends. What credit they may meet with I cannot say, but depend the consequence, according to their respective periods, will account for them, and vindicate them against the supposition of falsity and mere suggestion." Upon this, his sister left him till about 4 in the morning, when coming to his bedside to know if he wanted anything, and how he had rested, he made her this answer: "I have been taking a cursory view of my life, and though I find myself exceedingly deficient in several particulars, Yet I bless God I cannot find I have any just grounds to suspect my pardon. In short, says he, I have spent this night with more inward pleasure and true satisfaction than ever I spent a night through the whole course of my life. After he had concluded what he had to say upon the satisfaction that attended an innocent and well-spent life, and observed what a mighty consolation it was to persons, not only under the apprehension, but even in the very agonies of death itself, he desired her to bring him his usual cup of water, and then to help him on with his clothes, that he might sit up, and so be in a better posture, to take his leave of her and her friends. When she had taken him up, and placed him at a table where he usually sat, he desired her to bring him his box of papers, and after he had collected those he intended should be preserved, he ordered her to bring a candle, that he might see the rest burnt. The good woman seemed at first to oppose the burning of his papers, till he told her they were only useless trifles, some unfinished observations which he had made in his youthful days, and were not fit to be seen by her, or anybody that should come after him. After he had seen his papers burnt, and placed the rest in their proper order, and had likewise settled all his other affairs, which was only fit to be done between himself and his sister, he desired her to call two or three of the most reputable neighbors, not only to be witnesses of his will, but likewise to hear what he had farther to communicate before the return of his fit, which he expected very speedily. His sister, who had beforehand acquainted two or three of her confidants with all that had happened, was very much rejoiced to hear her brother make so unexpected a concession, and accordingly, without any delay or hesitation, went directly into the neighborhood, and brought home her two select friends, upon whose secrecy and sincerity she knew she might depend upon all accounts. In her absence he felt several symptoms of the approach of his fit, which made him a little uneasy, lest it should entirely seize him, before he had perfected his will, but that apprehension was quickly removed by her speedy return. After she had introduced her friends into his chamber, he proceeded to express himself in the following manner. Dear sister, you now see your brother upon the brink of eternity. And as the words of dying persons are commonly the most regarded, and make deepest impressions, I cannot suspect, but you will suffer the few I am about to say to have always some place in your thoughts, that they may be ready for you to make use of upon any occasion. Do not be fond of anything on this side of eternity, or suffer your interest to incline you to break your word, quit your modesty, or to do anything that will not bear the light, and look the world in the face. For be assured of this, the person that values the virtue of his mind, and the dignity of his reason, is always easy, and well fortified both against death and misfortune, and is perfectly indifferent about the length or shortness of his life. Such a one is solicitous about nothing but his own conduct, and for fear he should be deficient in the duties of religion, and the respective functions of reason and prudence. Always go the nearest way to work. Now, the nearest way through all the business of human life, are the paths of religion and honesty, and keeping those as directly as you can, you avoid all the dangerous precipices that often lie in the road, and sometimes block up the passage entirely. Remember that life was but lent at first, and that the remainder is more than you have reason to expect, and consequently ought to be managed with more than ordinary diligence. A wise man spends every day, as if it were his last. His hourglass is always in his hand, and he is never guilty of sluggishness or insincerity. He was about to proceed, when a sudden symptom of the return of his fit put him in mind that it was time to get his will witnessed, which was no sooner done, but he took it up and gave it to his sister, telling her that, though all he had was hers of right, yet he thought it proper to prevent even a possibility of a dispute, to write down his mind in the nature of a will, wherein I have given you, says he, the little that I have left, except my books and papers, which, as soon as I am dead, I desire may be delivered to Mr. Anthony Barlow, a near relation of my worthy master, Mr. Owen Perry. This Mr. Anthony Barlow was an old contemplative Welsh gentleman, who, being under some difficulties in his own country, was forced to come into Cornwall and take sanctuary among the tinners. Dickory, though he kept himself as retired as possible, happened to meet him one day upon his walks, and presently remembered that he was the very person that used frequently to come to visit his master while he lived in Pembrokeshire, and so went to him, and by signs, made him understand who he was. The old gentleman, though at first surprised at this unexpected interview, soon recollected that he had formerly seen at Mr. Perry's a dumb man, whom they used to call the dumb philosopher, so concludes immediately that consequently this must be he. In short, they soon made themselves known to each other, and from that time contracted a strict friendship and a correspondence by letters, which for the future they mutually managed with the greatest exactness and familiarity. But to leave this as a matter not much material, and to return to our narrative. By this time Dickory's speech began to falter, which his sister observing, put him in mind that he would do well to make some declaration of his faith and principles of religion, because some reflections had been made upon him upon the account of his neglect, or rather his refusal, to appear at any place of public worship. Dear sister, says he, you observe very well, and I wish the continuance of my speech for a few moments, that I might make an ample declaration upon that account. But I find that cannot be. My speech is leaving me so fast, that I can only tell you, that I have always lived, and now die, an unworthy member of the ancient Catholic and Apostolic Church. And as to my faith and principles, I refer you to my papers, which, I hope, will in some measure vindicate me against the reflections you mention. He had hardly finished his discourse to his sister and her two friends, and given some short directions relating to his burial, but his speech left him, and what makes the thing the more remarkable, it went away, in all appearance, without giving him any sort of pain or uneasiness. When he perceived that his speech was entirely vanished, and that he was again in his original state of dumbness, he took his pen as formerly, and wrote to his sister, signifying that whereas the sudden loss of his speech had deprived him of the opportunity to speak to her and her friends what he intended, he would leave it for them in writing, and so desired he might not be disturbed till the return of his fit, which he expected in 6 hours at farthest. According to his desire they all left him, and then, with the greatest resignation imaginable, he wrote down the meditations following. Part 2. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.